file bankruptcy within the first 5 years after their win. A comfort zone is an unconscious, pardon me, just one moment. A comfort zone is an unconscious thermostat until it becomes conscious. Then you can reprogram your mind and brain. Your mind can reframe, your brain can rewire. So, one possibility, make a habit of writing, construct a schedule, and be loyal to that schedule. Now, how you frame something can change the meaning or even determine the meaning. Because meaning derives from the frame we place around an event or situation. We have talked earlier about how if you frame excitement, let me put that a different way. Our brains can't tell the difference between excitement and anxiety. If we frame something that's new and different as excitement, we can then look for ways to engage. We can look for mastery and assessing what positive benefit. If we frame it as anxiety, it makes sense to stop, because if anxiety, danger, better head for cover, then we stop. So immediately, with that experience, how you frame makes a difference. One of the social scientists whose work I follow put this very elegantly and simply in the title of one of his last books, Don't Think of an Elephant. And that's exactly what the book is about in terms of some social science research. So, a simple example of how you frame something. Well, I have too much going on right now to find time to write. Reframed, I have too much going on right now to not create specific scheduled time to write. It's a way I take care of myself. Your response, your perception of an experience and a meaning is a bridge between the event and how you register and engage that event and the meaning that you attach to it. The frame can determine your state of mind. So we pay attention to whatever fits into our story, the framework we use. Remember, we talked earlier about once you decide to write, let's say, your book, and you decide on the title, the subtitle, you began to see things that you want to write about. You began to hear stories. You began to think of it in a different way. How do you reframe or reprogram to let in what you want to achieve with your book? So here's a key, I think. Your book outline is more than just your blueprint and plan. It's your frame. When you start writing about something specific, examples begin to appear. It's as if the universe is conspiring to help you achieve your goal. Yellow Jeeps keep appearing. You can't get away from them. I had first a series of experiences when I was doing psychoanalysis that I now have in mentor coaching in a particular way. My patients then, who were therapists or analysts, who I worked with in psychoanalysis, would notice that as soon as they worked through an issue and came to terms with it or achieved some mastery, suddenly a number of their own patients would bring up that issue they had just dealt successfully with. My thought at the time? My patient had been unconscious. Their patients had been unconsciously taking a number, patiently waiting until it was their turn, until their therapist was ready to deal with it. Now, think about those of you working in professional coaching. You've noticed and will notice the same thing with your clients. They'll wait for you to get your arms around something so you can then help them with it. Now, as authors, you'll notice it again, and it will pertain to what you're writing. So this is what the law of attraction tells us, and neuroscience and quantum physics. Whatever you focus on, you'll both notice and you'll bring about. It may be by visualization, if that is a style and a system you have, supported by affirmations that support your visualization. It may be planning or strategizing in other ways with other structures. Your future self lives in your present mind. If you clearly visualize and systematically plan that future, you can then move ahead to actualize what you do. So let's use visualization as an example. The neuroscience of a vision is that whatever we do, that we visualize, it brings exactly the same changes in the brain than actually seeing that thing through the optic nerve. If you visualize a successful completion of something that you're doing, for example, your book, then when you repeat that, it's as if you've programmed the completion, the experience already in your brain. You've programmed a future memory. So then you just strategically find a way to back into it, to access that and go about it in a planned way. Now, here's the important aspect. You don't make the brain change permanent unless you incorporate it into your story, into your identity. This may be why, for example, 95% of people who diet gain back their weight. They don't reprogram their body image. Our basic sense of self is the most fundamental force in the human psyche. If we do any kind of change and don't incorporate it into a transformation of our sense of self, we'll revert back to that behavior. This is why it's important, I think, with your coaching clients to help them incorporate and transform their whole operating system, their whole sense of themselves, their identity, in order to make it permanent. Same with writing your book. Envision the experience of your completed book, not getting there, but of being there, and exactly what you would experience with all your senses, how you announce it, what you do to engage others, the entire experience of the successful completion. This is a way to incorporate your objective as part of your identity rather than it being just a hope or a wish or a fantasy. We know that by simply picturing a danger, we can trigger the entire body responses of fight and flight. Now, while your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. And your conscious mind has to incorporate it into your evolving story to assimilate it, to metabolize it as part of yourself and your new story. Otherwise, it doesn't register, or it simply does not get metabolized. So the key elements are fairly simple in theory. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly, or they'll be eliminated. Secondly, conscious incorporation of this new vision into an ongoing story that will be metabolized as part of you, part of yourself. And finally, specificity about the experience of achieving the goal. So what visualization does is to crystallize the possibility into an articulated idea, and the experience of it changes the brain. So a vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Here's a simple example. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was in prison, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesbitt was an average weekend golfer. He broke 100 on two occasions. He had two 99s. Everything else was triple digits. But to preserve his sanity, he decided to visualize golf. He decided to get ready, put on his golf clothes, drive to his favorite golf course, stretch, smell the grass, all of this in his full sensory experience. He would warm up, make every shot, walk toward it. He spent 7 to 8 hours a day visualizing golf. After 7 years, when he was released from captivity, playing golf in his mind 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, he shot a 74. And that's the power of a vision. So let's talk about getting in state to do your writing. We enter and exit states of mind fluidly and visibly, usually not thinking about it that much. But it's like the precision passage of a baton between relay team members. Each of us has a set of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. You probably work with your clients to help them regulate a state of mind, manage emotion, and self-reflect to have that incorporated into growth and better insight and regulation. Now, a state of mind is a psychophysiological state. It's an internally organized software program that has its own expectations, attitudes, meanings, feelings. So, from an infinite sea of stimuli, a unique software package of each state can determine what's relevant and, once input, how that processing occurs. So each mind-body state determines how we perceive and how we process information and how we respond. So a key element is our awareness of different states of mind in order to know what state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing and editing, different states of mind. Brainstorming, completing a project, different states of mind. So the regulation of feelings and states of mind involves understanding and the mastery of the access to different states of mind. I want to give you some examples of how artists and authors each enter a creative state to fit their intended work. Dame Edith Sitwell would lie in the stale solitude of an open coffin as a prelude to entering the state of mind she needed to write her macabre literature. Now, let's get to less weird and more practical. Dr. Samuel Johnson and the poet W.H. They never learned the critical success strategy of managing their states of mind. Using drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotions can lead to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use, can determine meaning that you attach or that we attach to a stimulus. The meaning then determines behavior. So there are two exercises in the outline that I think are important. One on how to get centered in your body and your experience, and the other about getting grounded and centered to access a state of mind for exactly what you're doing. And that, if it's a creative endeavor like writing, that's an important first step to pause, to reflect on how you get centered and access a state of mind, and to sustain that state throughout the period of time that you write. And it's helpful to manage any kind of intrusions or interferences with that. the time that you decide to write, perhaps consider turning off the notifications on your computer, on your phone, to be able to sustain that focus without other interferences or distractions during the time that you write, because sustaining that state of mind can be optimal for that immersion and that creative endeavor. So there are various ways to do that, and you'll see a couple of examples in the workbook. One model of that, and a model that is also analogous to what we do in coaching with clients, is a model of a 2-minute mindfulness meditation. And to focus just on your breathing, to breathe in relaxation, to breathe out any tension. If you have a thought, which you inevitably will, because that's the job description of your brain, is to activate. And when that thought occurs, just let it go. Refocus on your breathing. It's an effective way to get and sustain a state of mind and to treat the engagement with your writing in that way. You begin to think about your water bill. Refocus on your writing. As you perhaps choose to do a method like this to more effectively go to sleep, to focus just on your breathing, and any thought you let go and refocus on your breathing. Think about the model of what we do in mentor coaching. When we engage a client, we are totally focused on the client, client story, and co-creating that. If we begin any instant to depart from that, like, wow, what's the best question I could ask her? I wonder if, you know, that's a signal to get refocused on being grounded and centered and staying in that flow with the client. And think about it in this analogy. In sports and in performance, it would be called a choke. Any instantaneous departure from a total focus in the performance flow will result potentially in a mistake or some kind of choke that interferes with optimal performance. Same with a client, same with your reading, and same especially with your writing. So this, I think, is something that that you may find useful. Let's look at a more abbreviated version of that, to look at a mantra. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. I want to tell you this backstory. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Roger Reed, arrived, he inherited a team that ranked 217th out of 217 in his division for free shot percentage, lowest far and away. What he did was institute a practice for a free shot where he asked the player to have a cue, a focus, a physiology. The cue was something just to remind them to get grounded and centered. He suggested dribbling the ball twice. And while they were doing that, the physiology was to take a deep breath in of relaxation and breathe out any tension, and to say a word that would align the energy field of their brains. He didn't explain it in this way, but it was just a cue, a focus, a physiology. So they would dribble twice, take a deep breath, and say a phrase to themselves, relaxed and smooth. So it was 3 or 4 seconds, less than the average time if you dribble and think about it. Additionally, he had them, when they were in practice, he suddenly blew the whistle, had them go to the free shot line and shoot 2 free throws, because in a real game, you don't get to calmly focus on your breathing. You're fouled, you're on tilt. You go to the free shot line, you shoot 2. So he simulated game conditions. If they made both, they got a breather. They didn't, they took 4 laps. In 2 years, they were number 1 in their division nationwide. So this is something that is very simple, simply a cue. It may be a word. It may be a gesture, a focus phrase like relaxed and powerful, and a deep breath. You know, it's something, for example, that I began doing when I would do a keynote, because I don't carry a basketball around to dribble. I would put my index finger and thumb together, and at the same time, a deep breath in for relaxation, and a phrase, relaxed and powerful. So in 3 or 4 seconds, I was ready to go. For those of you who might be interested, there's about a 15 or 18 minute free webinar called Master States of Mind. You can access it on the very bottom of the very last link on the homepage of MentorPath. MentorPath is in the signature line of the emails I've sent. It's just MentorPath.com. The very last link, Master States of Mind, and it's a webinar on exactly what we're talking about now. So let's apply this then to creativity, which a regulation, a state of mind, to enter a creative state. So inside each of us is a natural, innate energy, a drive to create. When we open ourselves to our creativity, we allow these internal experiences to flow through whatever channels are natural. Words, pictures, movement. Creativity is a natural part of life. To access a creative experience, we need to enter a state of mind that allows this flow. Flow is one of the positive states that's been studied in the last 3, almost 4 decades now that contributes greatly to effectiveness and performance. Flow, from another perspective, is a state of mind simply of being centered and focused without distraction, a state of mind that allows full immersion in the process of that performance mindset that can create huge results. In the state of mind of flow, you've probably done this, you've had this experience, you're engaged so fully in something without distraction that you actually lose track of time. You're in a zone. This experience becomes its own reward. It's a way of countering distraction and becoming immersed in your experience that's guided by your purpose. So here are some things that can interfere with that creative process, with obstacles that may be helpful to be aware of. Waiting until it's the right time. Waiting until you think you really have something to say. Putting it off until you have enough money to justify the time. Telling yourself, maybe already too late. Being concerned about what family or friends may think. Thinking about an appointment with yourself for creative time is an indulgence or a luxury. So in the beginning, it may not be as much about where you sit or what paper you use or what you write about. In the beginning, it's about beginning. In the beginning, your job is to start. Now, it may be helpful if you frame it. Have a place to write, have a place without distractions, have a way that you're going to write, whatever that style is, whether it's computer, whether it's yellow pad, whether it's dictation device. So a recommendation here is consider integrating your writing into other professional activities. You know, we've already discussed how you'll begin to hear vignettes and illustrations that you can capture and incorporate in your writing. Another strategy, present what you're writing about. For example, when I'm working on a book, I will only accept speaking engagements or guest podcasts that are in the flow of what I'm writing about, so that when I'm putting together a presentation, I'm also working on a segment of a chapter. Now, here's another example, since you asked. When I published Secret Language of Money with McGraw-Hill, they nudged me in no uncertain terms to start a blog. I had not done a blog at that, and they nudged me to start a few months before the book was released to enhance people who might be interested. And I kind of grudgingly did it, but then as soon as I started, I loved it. I began to find all kinds of things bloggable because I was writing about what I was most wanting to learn and extend. What I found was that 3 years later, I looked around, and between 40 and 50% of the material for a sequel to that book I had already done in a version by in a particular aspect in the blog. So that can be a kind of repurposing. So here's another perspective from someone whose work I really respect. Julia Cameron wrote about this in The Artist's Way. She describes morning pages as a way of fostering creativity. Morning pages are three pages of longhand writing, first thing in the morning, total stream of consciousness. She emphasizes there's no wrong way to do it, just write. Even if you can't think of anything to write, write anyhow. Write about what you can't write about. Don't edit. Don't judge. Just write. The morning pages are a primary tool for initiating and rediscovering creativity, because to just write, you get in a zone and a flow, and you're not worried about or even thinking about what the words are or thinking about the content in any way. You're engaging the process, and that's exactly what we're talking about in terms of state of mind, is to engage the process, the state of mind, then let that flow and get in the zone. So let's look at maybe an example of that, about even how insight can change the brain. We talk about in coaching about an aha moment, a moment of insight. Here, and think about your last aha moment. The instant that you thought about something in a different way than you've ever thought about before, and you wanted to nail that and capture it, put it down somewhere. Here's what happens. Here's what happened in your brain at that instant. If you were hooked up to an fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging of your brain, at that moment of insight, that aha moment, three different parts of your brain would light up, and it would be visible. And the experience would be of having a state of mind that is more synthetic and integrative and creative at that moment of insight. Now, here's what happens in your brain when you're not engaged in a moment of insight. When you're making out your grocery list or putting your schedule on, nothing happens. No part of your brain lights up. You're given facts, information, data. Nothing happens. That's what we hope to engage with our clients in mentor coaching, what we hope to find ways to access and sustain that more creative state when we're engaged in the creative endeavor and have set the time to do that. So that's really important, I think, to schedule, to protect, to preserve the space for this creativity to unfold, for it to live. You establish the crucible for this creative force when you set aside and provide an environment that's free of intrusions or distractions, or you may even consider planning for it. I'll give you an example. You guys already know more about me than you ever wanted to know. When I was in medical school in New Orleans, I would run and include running in the quarter, in the quiet residential part of the quarter, and be amazed at the courtyards of some of the residents, wrought iron gates, and wonder what it was like back there. Well, for the last decade and a half, I spend several weeks each fall in a courtyard in a 300-year-old Creole home and courtyard writing. Go to the same place every year and do just writing. Now I still see client. I mean, I still work with clients because I do it, you know, by telephone, still do training, but I'm immersed in that process and have a project and an approach each time that I go there. You know, for example, this last fall, I'm doing a sequel to a book before. It's on unprecedented experiences, and unprecedented experiences particularly in coaching. If you want to see just a brief glimpse of what I'm up to and an example of it, the last blog that I posted was called The Vampire Problem. So go to the website, click the tab for blog, and look at The Vampire Problem. And you'll see how this is, it doesn't sound like it, but this is something that may be a way to think about clients. And as you work with clients more and more, they will have unprecedented experiences such as success. Perhaps a prototype of that success may be wealth, fame, power, influence, things for which they have no internal model. So that's of particular interest to me. So that's my immersion. That's my focus. So I just give that as an example of having a place and having there are a number of studies that show how there is a more creative access when you're in nature. So that can be helpful too. There's a little bit in the outline that I won't go over about chokes and slumps, but I want to talk a little bit about writer's block, because writer's block usually happens when a writer can't enter a state of mind to create. The access to that creative state seems blocked. So it's an active process. It's a dynamic process. The remedy for that is getting in state, getting grounded and centered, and entering that creative state of mind and finding a way to sustain it. Getting centered brings mind and body together in full focus. A brief relaxation, like the 2-minute mindfulness meditation exercise, can be a useful way to a fluid shift into a best state for writing. So here's simple suggestions for someone if you're experiencing a writer's block. Go through a centering exercise. Maybe write about being blocked for a 10-minute period of time to see what happens. The blocking may be a symptom of simply not getting in state. So here's the best remedy, is to not do it. Each time you sit down to begin writing, do a brief grounding and centering to get in state and do what you need to do to sustain that state throughout your period of writing, and notice the immersion that you'll experience. So here's a summary of the neuroscience of writing. And this is in your outline. I just want to elaborate just a bit. Since old patterns are hardwired, consistency of focus on new experience is what it takes to change this wiring. And anytime one of your clients departs from the default mode to do something even a little bit new and different, there's going to be a signal of discomfort, a trepidation, because you're breaking the script. You're creating something new and different. Read this as evidence of proceeding, not as in my intuition tells me I'm doing the wrong thing or my gut tells me this is not right. That's simply the printout of doing something new and different, and it is inevitably accompanying every step of doing something new and different. Your clients will need to understand that too, so it can be framed as progress, as a signpost of being in new territory beyond where you've been before. So it's evidence of progress and reinforcement of proceeding to interpret it that way. Framing determines how we see something. Concentrate on new behaviors. Possibilities rather than problems or obstacles in order to create new brain pathways. And you know this, identifying a problem, labeling a problem, that is not enough to solve it. You have to have a system, a map. Create new ways of thinking that can stimulate brain circuits. An eye on the prize, and knowing where you're going, even for a very short segment of time, for example, you're writing. You have 30 minutes to write. Decide where you start, where you're going to get to, just like you would with a client in a coaching session, and then use that map, the two coordinates, where you are and where you're going, to guide what you do. That also can tell you what's detour and distraction. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions. New insights, adaptations occur this way because it's balanced learning, left and right brain, intellectual and emotional. Whenever you get diverted with a thought, an old feeling, or a behavior, redirect focus and energy flow to exactly what you're planning to do, to your map here and now. This creates a new story of creative immersion in writing. It's the discipline and work that ultimately, step by step, page by page, sentence by sentence, will complete your book. Have a plan and stick to it. We talked before. You do not need to be motivated to do something. I work with athletes and actors. They are not motivated to go to the gym in the off season or year round. They do it because they know they need to do that in order to do what's next. All they need is a plan and to stick to it. That's what you need for each writing session for your book. Remember that the power is in the focus, and that permanent change comes from the consistency of that focus and incorporating that process, transforming your identity as that unfolds. This is revising your operating system, creating an evolution of what you do and making it yours, and it becomes the bedrock of your identity, who you are. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Focus aligns and directs energy and effort. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Like the thought, when you're focusing on your breathing, let it go. You focus on your breathing. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. Here's a question for your client. And that client may be you right now. Here's a question for your client. When your client says, I'm just stuck, what behavior would we observe to know what you really want to do? In other words, refocus on the process and the positive focus. How would we measure a progress of a next step for that? How would you feel when you successfully complete that? Because we know that we do what we do because of how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. So put that into practice. You have 30 minutes to write. You create a map. And if you even want to dedicate a few seconds to it, imagine how you're going to feel when you complete it. And think about how you do that for your clients. If they're stuck in a decision or a process, a decision that they haven't made before, you know, move the framework. What will you be glad you've done by the end of the day or in a year from now? Shift framework. This is a perspective change. So knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. What's the behavior? Think about your new experience and your evolving self, how our new experiences will require thinking of yourself, your identity, in a new way, no longer in the old story. Here's how that can sound. I'm an author. So what I want to close with is inverse wisdom for authors. I think these are listed in the outline, but I want to give you the backstory of that inverse wisdom. These are I came home from college after my freshman year and announced to my mom that I decided to major in psychology. And we talked. She was excited for me. Then she mentioned that she'd made an A in her college psychology course. I never knew this. I said, oh, I didn't even know that. You must have really enjoyed it and studied a lot. She said, no. I was just answering everything on the test the opposite of what I thought was right. Now, that tells you way more about my mom than it does psychology, but here are a list of 9 things that are the inverse of conventional wisdom for authors in honor of my mom, who thought it was all opposite anyway. 1, burn your bridges. Make it impossible to go back to an old habit or way of being. If you decide to quit postponing the completion of your book, make it impossible in some way to go back to postponing it. Create an uncomfortable scenario if you should slip back. Focus on the present without the limiting habit. Reward yourself for proceeding and not going back. Yeah, and even if you have writer's block, you don't get to go to the mall during your writing time or get to go to Amazon and buy something. 2, do the opposite of what you normally do when you're afraid, worried, anxious, uncomfortable, or stuck. If you're uncomfortable with public speaking, avoidance is going to increase the fear. So do more of it. Embrace it. Join Toastmasters. You have to jump in the water because you can't learn to swim on paper. 3, obstacles reveal desires. Show me an obstacle, and I'll show you a desire. So instead of trying to figure out a way to sidestep or overcome or go around the obstacle, which only engages it, consider simply not creating it. Here's the coaching summary of this principle. When you're ready to recognize that you create an obstacle, you're ready to consider the possibility of not creating. 4, discomfort can be a sign of progress. That's how our brains work. Moving beyond your comfort zone is necessary for progress. Comfortable as well as confident are not places you began, but are places you can arrive. Moving from a comfort zone is necessary in order to proceed. 5. Lean into the unknown. If you wonder whether you can write and sell a book because you've never done it before, lean into the action of doing it. If you think you're too old to do something, you'll be right. You can tiptoe through life very carefully and arrive safely at death. 6. Don't believe every thought you have. Well, I'll never be able to write a book. Thoughts lie a lot. They're like my Uncle Ted, God rest his soul, or I'd have to use another example. You don't have to believe every thought that crosses your mind. You're not even stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better. Remember Vincent van Gogh's sage advice. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," then by all means paint. Then that voice will be silenced. 7. You do not attract what you want. You create what you focus on. Cue your radar for early recognition. Keep an eye open for yellow jeeps, stories, illustrations for your books, opportunities to talk about what you're writing about, not about your book, but about the subject matter, the process of engaging to learn more about what you want to learn about and write about. Talk about your subject, not the book you're writing. Talking about writing your book can dissipate the energy of its writing. How many people do you know who have a book in them or have been working on my book for the last decade? 8. You only see what you believe. I'll say that again. Some things have to be believed in order to be seen. And when you change the way you look at things, When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Now, this comes from quantum physics and the process of observing quarks. In quantum mechanics as well as in the brain, the question you ask influences the outcome you see. A well-verified law is called the quantum Zeno, Z-E-N-O effect. The mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. Consistent focus then rewires the brain. Use this law to help you write your book. You'll begin to see more of what you want to write about. And 9, finally, believe in someone, and he or she or they will show you why you do. Neuroscience has demonstrated, and this is huge, neuroscience has demonstrated that authentic belief in someone activates that person's brain to create a state of mind that transcends usual thinking and performance. Let me say that again. When you believe in someone, it activates that person's brain. It's a contagion effect to create a state of mind that can transcend usual thinking and performance. That person can be you, the author. We've got maybe a minute or two. Are there questions or clarifications that any of you have that might be helpful at this point? And again, I appreciate you sending in the questions and the things you'd like to be sure we talk about. Anything anyone wants to add at this point? Well, thank you again. And if you think of anything, jot it down. We'll have a period of discussion beginning end of our last seminar next week, or send to me an email. Thanks again for all of your kind words and the feedback that you're giving. I look forward to picking up right here next time. See you guys. Bye now.